have this little game that my previous guest have a question for my next guest. I closed the season 3 with Kiki. Kiki is one.
I know Kiki.
This fun. You know Kiki? Okay, awesome. So she was my last guest in the season finale, and she made a question for you.
Wow. I haven't ever thought about that, so... Does everybody always have an answer?
Yes.
Well, I can't no be the pressure. First person. Yeah, we may have to come back to that one. God.
That's okay.
It's a so, Kiki, question. Thanks great for question. Coming up with a hard one.
So, I closed the season 3 with Kiki. Kiki is one.
I know Kiki.
You know Kiki? Okay, awesome. So, she was my last guest in the season finale, and she made a question for you.
My question is, what is something that you used to believe about Bitcoin that you no longer believe? What is something that you've changed your mind on?
Wow. I haven't ever thought about that, so... Something I used to believe that I no longer believe.
You can take your time.
Yeah. Does everybody always have an answer?
Yes.
I did like my friend did. I started mining Zcash and Ethereum with GPU miners and was converting it over to Bitcoin. I never kept any of it, so I never lost any. But I really thought I needed to spend a lot of time studying other things. You know, and know the whole realm of cryptocurrencies. I didn't realize at the time, maybe I did since I was buying Bitcoin, but I don't think sold 100% that I needed to be, that Bitcoin, I knew Bitcoin was the way, but maybe I didn't know Bitcoin was the only one, you know, now, and I can't say when it happened, really. I guess 2017 or so, I realized that Bitcoin was the only way. So that would be my answer is that, you know, I came to realize I was always trying to get Bitcoin, but I felt like I was spending a lot of time. Now I feel like I spent a lot of time learning about other coins that I didn't need to know anything about. And I was better off learning more about Bitcoin. At least I came up with it. My question is, like, when you first got started or at any point in time, have you been a shitcoiner? Yeah. I admitted that I was buying shitcoins to begin with, but I was trading them for Bitcoin. So have you ever been a shitcoiner? Could be an easy answer. I mean, it could be a no. But if so, tell us about it.
That's a great question. So, you know, Gary's going to get me canceled by the Bitcoin maxis. I can think of two cases where I was S-coining. One was somebody wanted to donate Litecoin to me, and I spun up a Litecoin node and took in their donation and then sold it on Coinbase for more Bitcoin. The second was that when I was working at Kraken, I was asked to help with the due diligence on a potential acquisition of a company that had a Lightning product and an Ethereum product. And I, you know, as a product manager, I think the most important thing you can do as a product manager is to use the product, right? Put yourself in the shoes of the user. So I'll admit, I acquired a small amount of Ethereum. Probably like $50 worth of Ethereum to test the product out. And the product did not work. So, you know, provided that feedback to the corporate development team that, you know, from a product perspective, this is not a good acquisition. Now, I then put the Ethereum on. So I wanted to try other Ethereum products as well. So a Coinbase wallet is a non-custodial wallet created by Coinbase. So I transferred the Ethereum there and didn't think much of it. Then after we launched Lightning, our CEO, Jeremy, not Jeremy Powell, who's the head of the Federal Reserve, Jesse Powell. Sorry, Jesse. Okay. He asked, you know, if I would accept a NFT to congratulate me on the launch of the Lightning product. And I had mixed feelings about it, but at the end of the day, I felt like that it was a tremendous compliment and an honor to have the CEO, you know, want to recognize this achievement with an NFT. And, you know, that's his way of doing so. And I respect his culture. I accepted the NFT into my wallet, and you know, I still have it, and I still cherish it. So yeah, I'm a hodler of an NFT, and that's it on my S-coining journey. So thanks, Gary, for helping me get canceled on that. So my question would be, what was your first experience like with using Bitcoin, and what was the context, if it's legal?
Eso es buena pregunta. No estoy seguro, de verdad.
Yo sé, fue muy divertido.
Sí, bueno, mi primer caso de uso, de verdad, probablemente no tan legal, pero lo digo. Ahora estoy fuera de China, ahora puedo. Fui de enviar dinero a Europa, como trabajando en un exchange. El problema más grande que tienes en una empresa, en un país como China, es de sacar el dinero, tu salario es en dinero local, el CNY, el yuan, y convertir el yuan a dólares o a euros es súper, súper controlado y vigilado, y tienes que comprobar ciertas cosas y con papeles, y a veces no te dejan. Y yo he encontrado, sin querer, la solución más fácil del mundo. Convertir yuan a Bitcoin, enviar Bitcoin a un exchange en Europa y convertir Bitcoin a euros. Y así todo el proceso tardaba media hora y tenía mis euros, y así. Este es mi caso, mi primer caso de uso. Creo que fue otro momento de click, de la libertad que me da Bitcoin. Así es mi respuesta. What was the interaction that you would say that recently actually changed your view on Bitcoin? So what I'm asking is basically, having a couple of years probably in Bitcoin, or maybe less or more or months, you probably thought you understood Bitcoin, what it is. Did you have an interaction with a person, with someone that you told about Bitcoin or anything, that actually changed your view on Bitcoin, what it is, what it defines? So tell us about this interaction.
I love this kind of questions.
I do too. It's a fun one. That's a really make you think, especially because I've been in Bitcoin for about 10 years now. And what I'm discovering is, like, the network, it seems to be getting slower to change. My opinions on it are also becoming slower to change. Like, I remember in the beginning, like, there was kind of this Cambrian explosion of aha moments. And now it seems like those are fewer and farther between, but they still happen. It's not like they've ended. It's just a little slower to occur. I think the last one I had of those was actually, some work by Bob Burnett. Who's an advisor to SaaS Mining. So he's the CEO of Barefoot Mining and also the former CTO of Gateway Computers, which helped develop, you know, the personal computation device and led, like, kind of the Web 1.0 movement. He changed my mind about block space and how scarce it will be. Like, I've heard, you know, block space is a marketplace for Bitcoin, just like, you know, on the exchange, you can see the marketplace for fiat against Bitcoin, right? Like, what that price is going to be. In the same way, the block space itself is a marketplace that people are going to bid for with transaction fees, right? And he made me see how mining, Bitcoin mining was going to likely become. And quite, I'm still wrapping my head around it, but I agree with his thesis that because of the scarcity of transactions that can fit, you know, even optimized to the absolute end, the base layer Bitcoin blockchain, the number of settlements that can occur there is limited enough that as Bitcoin gets adopted into the financial system, banks will need to be miners in order to control block space to ensure their transactions can get in. And that was an aha moment for me about how Bitcoin is going to be used. I mean, if you strip it all away, you know, Bitcoin is a decentralized ledger. And if all the banks are going to use that decentralized ledger as their source of truth for their record keeping, there's just not enough transaction space available on that ledger each year. And so it is going to lead to that outcome, assuming that we are correct, that that Bitcoin embeds itself further and further into the banking system. So that really was one thing recently that shifted my mind about Bitcoin. My question is, especially somebody that's been in the ecosystem as long as you have, what's a question you would like to answer that you rarely ask?
That I rarely get asked, I'm assuming. Yeah, it's a good one. I wish more people asked me about kind of how I think about Bitcoin's evolution. I tend to get asked a lot of questions about like the presence of Bitcoin and like kind of what's happened with Bitcoin in China. But I feel like, not a lot of people ask me, what is it that the people you talk to and like different repressive contexts, what do they need out of Bitcoin, right? The other thing, I guess, like that most people don't realize is even though we're on the show and we're talking about Bitcoin in China, obviously I wrote a book about it. I've also written about a lot of different governments, Bangladesh, and just internet censorship overall. So, yeah, I'd probably ask myself a question about, like, you know, if I were to phrase it, it would be like, how do you think the future of, surveillance tech, what can Bitcoin do to, like, really fight that, right? Or what can we do as Bitcoiners to really fight that? That's what I
would. And what is the question about it? What? You know, they were the answer. The question, that what is the answer?
Oh, what is the answer?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, man. How long do you want to go? But I do want to cover a little bit of, like, my experience in El Salvador as well. So, and then I also want a question for Larry. So so brief answer to that is I think that.
The brief question.
I think Bitcoiners, should listen to a lot of different communities, and really understand the different use cases. I just feel like we live in very different universes, in different Bitcoin communities. People who are using it are not the ones who actually tend to go to the events. So it's a very different ecosystem. So just bridging that, I think, is really important. And then, you know, all the other things that follow. I mean, I don't know, activate LPC TV and all this other stuff. So that's my answer to that. Larry, I know you've come out with the big print. And you talk a lot about the effect that printing the US dollar has had on the American people, right? I think in a recent podcast, you kind of described your perspective as, the angry American, you know. I wonder what you think about the effect the US dollar has had worldwide on other peoples, including Argentinians, Chinese people, Iranians, and other people in the global financial architecture. What are the effects of the big print on all of us around the world?
That's a really great question. And I think it's had equal impact. And of course, you know, I write from an American perspective because I'm an American and, you know, I vote here and I'm trying to, you know, want to see this country be better for my kids. But I think it's had equal damage and maybe even worse on some of these other countries. I mean, by being the reserve currency, we've been able to have the largest military. That military hasn't always behaved in an honorable way. If you read the history of the CIA and a lot of things we've done, you know, we've exported our inflation to all of these countries. You know, we've used it as a way of, you know, in a sense, stealing some of their, you know, valuable commodities and underpricing their valuable commodities. You know, the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman is a good book to read to kind of, review how that has taken place. And it's a great question. I mean, I think it's had a very deleterious effect on everybody. I mean, sadly, the U.S., in my view, has misused its position as the world leader. I mean, in 1946, after World War II, the U.S. was clearly just the only leader in the world. I mean, Russia was still there, but we were so far ahead of them.
Yeah.
And we had a position of power and prestige, and you know, our industry hadn't been ruined by the war and so forth. And so, you know, sadly, what happened is we misused that position somewhat, and we did things that didn't necessarily, you know, serve our interest in the long run, and were bad for other parts of the world. I mean, take, for example, the Middle East. We wasted $8 trillion on wars in the Middle East, and a lot of people died in those wars. And for what? you know, I guess probably to try and secure some oil supply. But, you know, the weapons of mass destruction turned out to be a lie. And, you know, there was just a lot of stuff that we did that was not in our best interest or in the world's best interest. So I think, you know, I think sadly, everything America does has an impact on everybody in the world. And because American policies have not been what I would call enlightened in terms of monetarily or militarily, I think the whole world has suffered, and that's really sad. It's unfortunate, but you know, that's the bad news. Okay, let's try and I don't want to be a doomer. Let's try and, you know, view the good news, and that is to say that, you know, this distributed information that the internet brings us, and now this distributed money that Bitcoin brings us, we actually have the fix to the problems of these large centralized governments having too much power and abusing it, because we can now all talk to each other all around the world, and people can get their news from alternative sources. And, you know, the big powerful governments, they're on the run. You know, 80%, I just saw a poll this morning, like 80% of the people in America think the U.S. government's corrupt. I mean, that's not good if you're in the U.S. government. And so, you know, now we haven't solved for it yet, but guess what? Yeah. We're going to. You know, I mean, if when you get that kind of consensus, believe something, and then you have a crisis, I think we're going to fix some of these problems. But I, you know, it's a great question, and I'm very sympathetic to the impact, the bad impact that the U.S. behavior has had on everybody. You know, I don't talk about that much in the book, and I'm not, you know, the book is just, as I say, I'm aiming at a U.S.-centric audience, because I think that, you know, what I hope for the book, just so you know, I hope it really goes viral. I hope it spreads wide. You know, we got 300 plus million people in this country. I hope a lot of people read it. And then I hope what happens is we actually get a political movement which says, hey guys, we got to go back to the Constitution, we got to end the Federal Reserve, and we got to return to sound money. The things that a brilliant politician here said years and years ago, and I supported him, a guy named Ron Paul. You know, if we'd listened to him back then, we'd be in much better shape today than we are. And, you know, and there were a few of us who followed him, and then he got some votes, but not enough. And, you know, what I'm hoping is that as this, you know, as what's going on now gets further and deeper and becomes more pressing, that, you know, more and more people do things like read this book and understand what the issue is, and then more and more people stand up, and, you know, some politician will come along and say, hey, here's what we did wrong, here's how we're going to fix it, here's a return, you know, and they'll win, and we'll fix it, right? And this fourth turning will be over, and we'll have a very bright future for my kids and someday my grandkids. I mean, that's kind of the hope, right? That's the dream of the book. And of course, it doesn't just apply to the U.S., though, it applies to the whole world. I think the most interesting question that you can ask Bitcoiners is, how do they see it unfolding in the next 5 or 10 years? I think we all have different views. I mean, you know, I think Samson thinks we're going to $1 million tomorrow. And, you know, I think it's probably going to take 5 to 7 years. And I think, you know, everybody has a different perspective on the timeline. And I think all Bitcoiners understand that, you know, what we're talking about is happening, and it's kind of inevitable. It's kind of baked in the cake. I mean, in the same way that the internet spread, you know, Bitcoin's going to spread. Everybody's going to, you know, in some time frame, we're all going to be Bitcoiners. So I don't think there's much debate about that amongst the hardcore Bitcoiners, but I think there's a lot of debate, and it's healthy debate, and it's interesting to hear people's perspectives on what's the timeline, what are the key events, how does it unfold, you know, and will we ever get to a whole Bitcoin standard? I mean, I strongly believe that, you know, my kids, or certainly my grandkids, they'll kind of look at the dollar. It'll be like this antique thing that everybody used to use. And now, you know, things will be priced in satoshis. You know, in dollar terms, I'm not sure what a satoshi will be worth, but, you know, a car will have a satoshi price, and a hamburger will have a satoshi price, and everything will be priced in satoshis. And so I think that's inevitable. But you know, in my lifetime, I don't know. I mean, it could be 40 years from now. I'm not sure. But I think that's where we're going. And I'm always interested when almost everyone I speak to in Bitcoin land, I kind of say, hey, give me your perspective. What do you think the timeline is on this? So I would ask your next guest, I would say, hey, what's your timeline for, you know, full Bitcoin adoption? We're all priced in satoshis and fiat has failed. And I think that would be a very interesting question.
Mate. That is an interesting question. We should have a whole episode on answering that question.
Yeah, but this is the last question, so let's wrap it up.
First of all, what a beautiful guy. What a lovely guy. I'm looking forward to reading his book. And I don't know, I struggle with that one. I struggle with that one because sometimes I get excited. Sometimes I'd be like, ah, oh, you know, but then I think, oh, that's too soon. I think realistically, it's going to be like 30 years before really it established itself and starts to solidify.
But I really do think within the next sort of 10 years, it will be so recognizable that people would understand that you can pay in it if you wanted to, and more people will be. And that will just start driving the sort of inevitability of Bitcoin. I do think there will be a tension in a time where people will be resistant to that. Peter Schiff, for example, will always be resistant to it. But for example, there'll be people that really sort of don't want it to happen, maybe through their ignorance or that they're benefiting from the fiat system. But it will just be TikTok next block. Get out the fucking way. Bitcoin don't care. That's what I think. But that's a whole sort of episode in of itself, so I'm going to restrain myself. If you could choose a person to orange peel, anyone, anywhere, who would you choose and why? You know, why would you want to have this person orange peeled? And what are you trying to gain, or what is it you want to receive from them by them being orange peeled? So good luck in answering that. I'll be watching to hear your answer and stay curious.
Yeah, so I'd love to orange pill the judge that sentenced me.
Wow, really?
Yes, I would love to orange pill her because, you know, at the end of the day, she's just a person, but she also has a lot of influence in the judicial system. So as we start to use Bitcoin and digital assets more, I think it's important that judges and people of power like that know more about Bitcoin and its utilization and what it can do for people, good and bad. So yeah, I would really like to orange pill her. Just tell her what it's about and why, not only just so she can see what it's done in my life. I'm really the use case here. Look at what Bitcoin's done in my life. And I want to show her everything that I do and everywhere I request to travel. And even my probation officers seeing my success, I would love to share with her how I did it. And it's really, truly Bitcoin and that mindset and how I've changed from being so fiat minded to Bitcoin minded and how it really is freedom. And how, you know, money is corrupt. And I think when you start learning more about Bitcoin, you start understanding money because it forces you to see, you know, a stable currency. You're all of a sudden seeing like a deflationary currency and you start seeing all the wrongs of the dollar. Even in sentencing of white collar crimes, I think it would be really important for them to know about Bitcoin. Because when you learn about Bitcoin, you learn about how awful the United States dollar is and really how broken it is. And then once you really see how broken it is, you start to see why people are so money motivated. And so maybe that would help her understand a person's story more.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. So Bitcoin has a lot of values behind.
I do have a big question for her. Yeah. So the question that I'm asking you is, because you are a woman in Bitcoin, what are the challenges that you've faced being a woman, and have you been embraced in this community that is full of men?
Súper, súper bien. Y qué buena pregunta,
la verdad. Puedes responder en español, si quieres, porque va a ir
con subtítulos en inglés. Ah, ok, sí, es cierto, eso fue. ¿Cuáles son algunos de los challenges? Para pensar. Muchos de los challenges, creo que vienen un poco más uno personal. Yo siento que fue un challenge. Fue que yo sentí que a lo mejor no te toman en serio, por así decirlo. Como que no te toman en serio, pero ya después al being embraced, como me dijo, cómo es embraced by this community, y viendo yo que no se traducía a, ay, no, es que quizás como yo soy mujer, no, se tradució a trabajo real. Yo, como por así decirlo, me miden con la misma medida que miden a mi compañero director de comunicaciones, que es hombre, ¿me entiendes? Entonces creo que uno de los biggest challenges al final ha sido navegar como ese balance entre crecimiento e integridad, sobre todo en el espacio de Bitcoin, que a veces pues las narrativas pueden cambiar bastante rápido, pueden ser polarizadas, pueden ser co-opted. Entonces creo que como salvadoreña y como mujer, a veces he sentido que he tenido que probar mi credibilidad más que otros. Entonces ese balance ha sido tal vez uno de los challenges que yo he sentido como más. Digamos, y como educador, el ongoing challenge de estar como, ¿me entiendes? De mantenerte cierto, true a tus propios principios, verdaderos tus principios, mientras mantenemos y creamos más sistemas para poder escalar. Porque podemos escalar por el mero hecho de escalar, que queremos, ay, queremos llegar tantos, pero nos perdemos a veces en el proceso, porque queremos solo, como te decía, probar, ¿verdad? Como probar más, a probar a quien tú dices. En lo personal, creo que esos son unos de los challenges que yo he sentido. Pero, como te decía, sí he sido muy afortunada de being embraced por la comunidad, no solo local como global, porque creo que cuando tú cuidas esos valores del por qué detrás de tu trabajo, entonces ya no tienes que probar nada, porque tú eres como, yo no soy perfecta, ¿me entiendes? O traté de serlo y eso es lo que me pasó, ¿me entiendes? Me dio burnout, que un breakdown mental. ¿Por qué? Porque tratar de hacer algo que no estamos diseñados para hacer. Desde estudiantes, me tienes en una pequeña pueblo allá en San Hachel, hasta maestros o personas en el Bitcoin Space en otros países. Creo que ha habido esta como que silenciosa, pero verdaderamente poderosa reconocimiento y valorización de lo que nosotros hacemos detrás. No todo el tiempo, a veces lo vemos, muchos no creen, ay, pero es que está haciendo. Es un trabajo de todos los días, a veces con ese de que amamos nuestro trabajo, le dedicamos demasiadas horas. Entonces, para hacer lo que está correcto y no solo lo que es rápido. Así que creo que ese tipo de realmente you're trying to build something, lo que estamos haciendo y muchas veces evaluando, sobre todo nosotros trabajando de manera pues con fundraising, pero también trabajando y caminando al lado nuestro a su manera. Why and how you stay motivated, connected with things that hard.
Yeah, there's been like a million times where I wanted to give up and quit, and it's like a weekly thing, you know, because there's so many just things that'll pound. A lot of people are leaving because of the IMF, the whole IMF loan that's happened in El Salvador. A lot of people will quit on construction after you get robbed multiple times. We've had our tools stolen. We've had materials stolen. We've had huge errors in construction. We've had employees steal from us. And it gets to a point where it's like, why am I even doing this? You know what I mean? Like, I don't even own my own house. I've been working for the last decade, just giving. And sometimes the ego inside of me will be like, what do I have for myself? You know, and the only way that I can truly continue, the only way is through fasting and prayer. That's the only way. I have to get onto my knees. I have to pray every single day. I talk to God and I ask for patience. I ask for wisdom. I ask for joy, for love. I ask for protection for my family. I ask for peace in my partner's heart, because when the partner's not happy, no one's happy. So the only way I'm able to do that is by calling upon a higher power. And for me, that's trusting in Jesus Christ. If you had or have access to abundant wealth, how would you use it to change humanity?
I would put it and use it for education. A lot of education, like especially the younger kids, like, you know, teach them like about the system, like the money system, like, and bringing everything like back to the roots, like, you know, yeah, education. I would put it into education. Let's say waking up tomorrow and the entire world is orange-pilled and on Noster. What's the first thing you would do?
That I would do?
Yeah, if right now we are in the Bitcoin hyper-Bitcoinization.
If I'm in my perfect hyper-Bitcoinization world and everyone's on Noster, that's part of the hyper-Bitcoinization world.
Awesome.
I'd probably like, I mean, I think at that point, if the whole world's on Bitcoin, I'm probably like living in a mansion somewhere beautiful, you know, I'm like an early adopter to this like global technology. So honestly, I think I'd probably just like, I'd just be chilling. I'd probably just be doing my astrology predictions as usual. Maybe I'd be, what is it called when you post on Noster? Like, what's the, is it just posting? But there's in there a word for something? Like, you can zap stuff, right? Like, you can zap.
No, but zap is when you, yeah, you can zap sats.
But and I think there are notes.
I think there are notes. I think there are notes.
Okay, so maybe I'd post my, you know, I'd say, hey, here's the chart of Bukele. Here's my upcoming day. I'd post my note on Noster and everyone would zap me sats. You know, maybe that would be my hyper-Bitcoinization Noster future.
All right, that's cool. That's awesome.
So kind of what I'm doing already. My question is, which is worse, ordinals or Bitcoin astrology? And why? And why? You have to also answer and why.
Yeah, no problem. So definitely ordinals. For the simple reason that Bitcoin astrology doesn't bloat the chain with nonsensical transaction. Both are fictional things that doesn't exist really at the protocol level, but one is polluting, the other is just moronic.
All right. What about you, Science?
Okay, I will have the same take as Theo. I think I don't care about ordinals, and I think it's valueless. I mean, if you need to write on the blockchain special events or things for your family to remember, you can do an up return. I don't understand ordinals, to be honest. But Bitcoin astrology, if we are talking about trading Bitcoin with astrological signs or whatever, I think that's interesting. I think that's not worse than doing a technical analysis. Eh?
That's why? The same. Why? Because both don't have any background, science background.
trying to guess the entropy of the market, and yeah, if you prefer to use astrology instead of technical analysis, good for you, man. I think both are the same. Frank Corva. Do you spend Bitcoin? And if yes, what's the craziest thing you ever bought?
Yeah, that's a good one. What's the taste of politician dicks? No, don't worry. You're only the messenger. That's my question.
Yes, I spend Bitcoin. Craziest thing I ever bought, Bitcoin? I guess I wouldn't call it crazy, but I guess I never thought I'd pay for a cab ride in Kenya with Bitcoin. I was just telling you how I use Tando, and I think I wouldn't call it crazy, but I just didn't expect to go to Kenya and be able to use Bitcoin almost anywhere I went. So I think that was maybe that's the best thing I could think of off the top of my head. Otherwise, it's usually just like smaller items, coffee, whatever. You know, sometimes yeah. I buy stuff from like the Lightning store or something like that. But I would just say maybe the most unexpected. I'll substitute his word for crazy for unexpected. Paying for cab rides to get around Kenya with Bitcoin, I think, was definitely one of the more shocking things. I just didn't think that would happen so quickly. Politicians. Yeah. I get his point, and I know the Bull Bitcoin crew, and I just actually interviewed Francis, for a piece I wrote for Bitcoin Magazine. I love the spirit of Bull Bitcoin, so I don't take offense to the question. But I will say, I don't think, you know, I know he's joking, but I don't think, that's fair. I'll put it that way. When I speak with politicians, I ask them about things like their feelings on the Samurai case and the Tornado Cash case. I don't just say, hey, tell me how great it would be if the U.S. had an SBR or if we, you know, Donald Trump is so great or blah, blah, blah. Like, at the same time, I let them share their victories. If they're doing good stuff, I always give them space to share the good stuff. But I constantly tell them that there are real issues at play, and the prosecution and persecution of open source developers is a real issue. And I bring that up with them. And so I would say to most people, before you critique me, think about whether or not, if you were sitting down with them, you could do that in a way where they don't just throw you out of the room. That's because they would otherwise. It's very easy for me not to get invited to any of these events and not to get invited back to any of these events. So I do it in a way where ideally we make incremental gains and we push the conversation forward. I will say this as well. I have been asked to do certain things politically, where not only did I say no, but I offered to resign from my position. I said I will resign before I do those things. And so just so that people know, I'm not here to throw softballs at politicians or whatever, but I am here to treat them as human beings. And I know some of you might hate politicians and don't want me to treat them as human beings, but I try to treat all people as human beings. So when I sit down with them, I like to try to say, okay, like, tell me about the good stuff you got going on. And then usually, I've been very clear, you know, open about this. I usually make sure to have one or two very difficult questions that might make them uncomfortable too. But I ask them in a way where I say, look, you know, this isn't just about me. The Bitcoin community cares about these things. What do you have to say about them? If people don't like those answers, that's not on me. The politicians can say whatever they want, you know.
Absolutely.
But in the meantime, you know, I do my best, I think, given my circumstances. And again, someone who believes in even like the spirit of Bull Bitcoin, I believe in what they're doing immensely. But I also believe in democracy, and I know that might be like an unsexy thing to say. And if we're going to have a democracy, we should partake in it, and we should speak with the leaders and hold them accountable to the best of our ability. So that'd be my sort of diplomatic answer to what he's to the second question.
My previous guest was Frank Corva. Do you know him?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's now in the press room at the White House, which is really cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's a fun little fact. He used to be a PA on The Apprentice. He would drive Donald Trump to set on the TV show The Apprentice.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, fun little
fact. I don't know if most people know that, but
that's really interesting.
A lot of my friends worked on that show.
Wow. Oh, really? That's so cool. Wow, what a small world as well.
Yeah. Hollywood's very small.
I'm always interested to hear what people have to say. To what degree do you think the Bitcoin community should be involved in politics, on any level, global politics, local politics? To what degree they should? To what degree should Bitcoiners be engaging with politicians?
Oh boy, yeah, I see. That's perfect coming from him. That's a great question. I have mixed feelings, but just to give a quick answer, I think they should be. I think it is good because politicians are just another group of people that we should orange pill and educate properly. They're still going to be politicians. They're still going to play politician games. But I think the more that they can see what we see, it might slightly help them shift towards truth and transparency, because that's what Bitcoin has taught all of us Bitcoiners. Once we see that there is this honest system, it helps us replicate that and demand that in other areas of our life. And that would be beautiful if we could get politicians to do that. That might be too lofty a goal. So when quantum computing is here and we know that the old, you know, pre-2010 wallets are going to be exposed, but they haven't moved, do we as Bitcoiners have a responsibility to move those for them? Or do we just say, tough, we shouldn't touch them, but potentially a hacker drains those wallets?
That is a deep question. What do I think about that?
You can take your time about it.
Pardon?
You can take time to think about it. Yeah. While I prepare the other game, actually.
So with the way my brain works is, who would move those coins? Like, so if the Bitcoin community wants to be benevolent, I think I pronounced that properly, who would hold the role or take the responsibility of moving those coins, and what would they do with those coins? It's like, so my gut instinct would kind of say, if Satoshi or whomever, you know, holds those coins in the wallet, if they choose or cannot move them, is it really up to us to actually step in and do something? Like, there is someone behind quantum computing, right? Mm-hmm. If that were to happen, should we just let it happen? Do you see what I mean? Because then whomever decides to move the coins, what are they going to do with them? How will they redistribute them? Are they just going to, like, you know, send it to some, like, basically burn the coins by sending it to a wallet? Like, what is, yeah, I don't know.
No, yeah, I get you. Actually, I don't have a proper answer for them. I didn't think about it. But yeah, it's quite interesting. Actually, quantum computer, that's another rabbit hole. I don't know. Have you talked about quantum computer in your show? I haven't.
I've touched on it briefly. I know that, so from what I understand, we still have maybe a decade or so to go before, or maybe a bit longer, I don't know, before that poses a real threat. And it's the like original wallets, what is it, P2K or something wallets that are impacted by quantum computing. It's not, you know, some of the most recent wallet addresses and stuff. And so I haven't paid it much attention because I don't see it as an immediate threat.
Mm-hmm.
But if I consider that within the Bitcoin community, there's always some kind of like debate. We don't agree on anything, on everything. There are always conflicts and fights. I think that addressing the threat of quantum computing is obviously legitimate because we want addresses that are quantum proof, so to speak. But then that doesn't solve the other problem of who, you know what I mean? Who is responsible for these coins that have moved? What does that say to the wider community? And how will they be redistributed? Like, I'm not sure that moving the coins would be the solution, but I don't know. Hi, JJ. I hope you're well. You were on my podcast not so long ago, and I have a very fond memory of you talking about how women shouldn't really be involved in finance or Bitcoin. And so my question to you is this the reason there are no women who work for Bull Bitcoin? That's it. Thank you. Bye.
She tried to corner us. And she's trying to corner me. Okay. So first of all, she misinterpreted what I said in her podcast. Please, guys, go in the podcast. That's not what I say. I don't think women are optimized for financial decisions. And that's clear. You know, in finance, in anything, there is no woman. That's by nature. I don't think they're optimized for that, but there is lots of like women that are good at it. So they are more of the exception than the rule. You know, Saida is a great example because she's very smart and she's very beautiful. She's very hot. And you see, you can be hot, beautiful and smart at the same time.
Of course.
So Saida, I see where you go. And that's wrong because there is a woman working for Bull Bitcoin. Uh-huh. She's doing a compliance. I won't say her name. I don't know if she's public about it, but, or a compliance person in Canada is a woman and she's in the team and it's going great. And yeah, we have like no problem if we, I mean, you know, Francis, the way he hire people, it's very, mood based. So most people that are in Bull Bitcoin, it's people that met Francis in barefoot in a beach in Costa Rica or somewhere else. And
really?
Francis saw them, he talked to them, he had like a great conversation and he hired them. Like for me, for example, he hired me. He doesn't even know my background. He doesn't even know what I was working before. And he doesn't even know my university or anything like that. He just hired me because he saw me on Twitter and he liked what I said and Theo recommended me and he was like, okay, let's go. So I think if there is like a competent woman that's going to fit a need that we have, he's going to hire her. Yeah.
That's cool.
But the thing that we came back to the same problem. The thing is like competent woman in the field that we're working on, because most of the Bull Bitcoin employees are technical person, devs and people like that. So finding a woman that's a dev, that's a Bitcoin maximalist, that have like cypherpunk ethos and that's competent, they exist. And shout out to them, but they are pretty rare.
Absolutely. Yeah, we need to protect them.
Saida, she tried to corner me. I see you, Saida. I see you.
My question for you is, if you had to go on holidays for 2 weeks with a Bitcoin influencer or someone known in the Bitcoin sphere, who would it be and what would you do? Ciao.
Wow. Okay. So go on vacation for 2 weeks with a Bitcoin influencer.
What?
And what would we do? And where would we go?
Yes. Or we discuss.
Okay. Let's see. Okay.
You can take your time.
Yeah, let's see. Okay, I would probably... So, I don't know if you know Isa Santos from BTC Isa.
Ah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, hey, Isa, I've never met her, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't met her yet, but hopefully I'll meet her soon. I would probably go to BTC Isla, and I would stay with her for 2 weeks. And I think she's super cool, super fun. And I would love to just see how she's doing everything there, see the cafe and have a good time.
That's actually a really good answer. And Isabel is awesome. She's a friend of mine and what she's doing, it's incredible. I think it's a great destination. You picked really well.
Yeah. And I've never been there. So I think that would be amazing. Okay. My question is, if you had to give a young person from Gen Z one piece of advice, it could be Bitcoin related or not, what would it be?
Well, I have to preface this by saying I kind of am Gen Z.
No, you're not.
Like, I'm like right on the cusp. Okay. I call myself a Zillennial.
She's lying, guys.
It's not. I'm not. It depends on when the cusp is. Like, different institutions use different years. And I won't say my birth year, but I am. Well, it's not that hard to find out, but I am on the cusp. But I just, like, I need to put on my Gen Z hat for a second, you know? If I had to give a piece of advice to someone from Gen Z at all, sorry, was it any generic advice at all?
I think, yeah.
Or Bitcoin related, generic advice. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, no, Bitcoin related.
Well, I mean, I guess this kind of applies to Bitcoin and a Bitcoin journey as well, but I guess my piece of advice would be, like, just...
You can take your time.
Take the time to understand yourself and give yourself an opportunity to really understand yourself and try new things and figure out what works for you and what doesn't and what you like and what doesn't, and try your best not to let, like, too many people influence what that might be, and then be true to it. Because I think in this age of the internet, it's very easy to take on other people's opinions or other people's ways of expressing, or whether that's like art or fashion or the content you consume or whatever it is. We're inundated with information and opinions all the time, and it can be very, very overwhelming to be able to, like, center in and figure out, like, what actually you want and what works for you, as opposed to, like, what may work for people around you, kind of thing. So yeah, take the time to, like, develop a relationship with yourself and figure out what you want out of life, and, like, go after it, because life's too short and the opportunities are endless. It's like, yes, the world is a little bit crazy, but also, like, there's so much beautiful technology, people, experiences out there, but you have to, like, develop, like, a good, like, ground and baseline in order to be able to be open to those experiences and ultimately, like, have a fulfilling life. So yeah, do you, boo.
All right. That's a very millennial advice. Thank you very much. Just messing with it.